Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Live from the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And this hour, we continue to talk about the incredible pictures coming right off of Titan's surface by the Huygens Space Probe. Our guest this hour, Richard C. Hoagland. Richard C. Hoagland is a former Space Science Museum curator, former NASA consultant, almost said NASA administrator, and during the historic Apollo missions to the moon was science advisor to Walter Cronkite, CBS News. His website, enterprisemission.com. We'll talk with Richard this hour about the incredible things going on the moon, Titan. Hey, Richard, how are you?
Good evening, George. Well, actually, it's good morning now.
What an evening for you it must be, huh?
It's been a heck of a day. I haven't slept much today, I got to tell you.
It's got to be exciting.
It's extraordinary because there's only kind of one time in the whole history of the species that you do something for the very first time. And today we did something amazing for the very first time. And I am astonished at these pictures. And what's really ironic, George, you know, Coast used to go 5 hours, right?
Yes, yes.
When we get off tonight, when you get off at 3 a.m. my time, literally at that moment, the ESA people, the European Space Agency people who have been working on this data now ever since Huygens dropped in on Titan about 24 hours ago, they will have a whole new batch of pictures and data processed, and they're going to have a major press conference in Darmstadt, Germany, just as you go off the air, which means it will be one of those major, stay tuned.
I'll let Art do it on Saturday.
I don't know who his guest is, but I don't think he's doing Titan.
These pictures, do they surprise you?
Yes and no. They don't surprise me in that, actually, if you go to the Enterprise Mission website, enterprisemission.com, and look at the main page, we have an artist concept up there right under the Godfan ET banner. If you click on that, it takes you to our Titan page, and there's an enlargement of this artist concept, and you'll notice something very important. It has Huygens descending out of the orange Titan skies on his parachute, final few moments before landing. And on the landscape in front of the synthetic camera view, you have orange-colored stuff, you have some stuff sticking up, and you have this very dark black pool of something, okay? Then if you scroll down that page to the bottom, you'll see there are three pictures.
Mm-hmm.
One looking at the horizon, taken from Huygens when it was on the surface. We'll get to that in a minute. And two others as it was descending on the parachute. And what's eerie is the one on the left. Look at those dark black pools. They look identical to the artist concept.
Yes.
At the top.
Yep.
Now, those dark black pools, I agree with David, they are either methane or ethane or both. They are liquid petroleum at around a balmy minus 300 degrees Fahrenheit. So we are looking at seas or ponds or lakes of liquid natural gas. I mean, you talk about alien, exotic, sci-fi landscapes.
You talk about resources, if you wanted to tap into that.
Well,
my gosh.
But come on. Natural substances, fossil fuels are primitive. You know?
Exactly.
Okay, but that brings up the key question. why does any of this stuff exist at all? Now, you and David didn't have time to get into that, but that, to me, is the key question. I mean, everybody who listens to me on Coast knows that I usually come at things with a little different perspective than most of the other guys.
You're edgy, as I would say.
Well, I try to think outside the box. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take much, you know, effort, because there's so much wonderful frontier edgy stuff going on these days. Was it you last night that said it's the best of times, the worst of times?
You got it. My favorite. One of
it
my favorite
really
words.
Is. You know, this compounding back-to-back with the awful stuff going around the tsunami tragedy and how we've covered that on our website. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are living in this incredible era where it's the best and the worst simultaneously. But back to Titan. Doesn't anybody kind of wonder why in a Saturn system of basically ice balls, all right, you've got Mimas and Enceladus and Hyperion and Dione and Iapetus and Phoebe. They're basically chunks of ice, like when we used to make snowballs and we wanted to be really mean, we put a little rock inside.
And throw it at somebody.
And throw it at, yeah. Well, that's basically what they are.
Of course, I never did that.
Of course not, George, no.
You did.
Well, yes. Anyway, what you did is you put the snow around the core of the pebble or the small rock to give it more heft so that when it would fly farther, all right, less air resistance, et cetera, et cetera, and it would have more of an effect when it got where it was going. The moons of Saturn are basically like those kind of snowballs with rocks inside, except for Titan. Titan is... I mean, you heard David talk about that picture that's the one at the top where you're looking out toward the horizon.
Yeah, that's a strange picture. They're all strange.
And what look like rocks, but they can't be rocks.
Yeah.
Because Titan has an incredibly low density. It's like 1.33. It's just slightly denser than water. Its surface gravity is one-tenth of the Earth's. It's less than the moon's surface gravity, for God's sake, which is one-sixth. Yet it has an atmosphere, he was right, which is 1.5 to 1.6 times greater than the entire atmosphere of the Earth. Now, back in the early part of the 20th century, there was a very famous astronomer named James Jeans who published an equation relating how long planets can keep their atmosphere in the solar system, which related to their surface temperature and to their surface gravity. And this is kind of like a logical thing. If you have a planet with a high gravity and a low temperature, it will hang on to all its air, right?
Supposed
because the air can't escape, you know, reach escape velocity and leave the top of the atmosphere.
Right.
Whereas if you have a planet, and I'm using that term very broadly here, including moons, if you have a celestial body with a low gravity and a relatively high surface temperature, the atmosphere will leave relatively quickly. So you look around the solar system and you see places like Mercury, which has no atmosphere, you know, high gravity, high temperature, no atmosphere. You see a planet like Venus, which is basically a twin of the Earth's, you know, mm-hmm. It has an atmosphere, very dense atmosphere. Then you look at Earth, it has the atmosphere we think of as normal. Right next door we have a body called the Moon, which has 1/6 surface gravity, it has no air. Same distance from the Sun, same temperature, you know. So you look at Titan, here's a planet, you know, bigger than any other body in the solar system, moon-wise, except Ganymede. It's almost half the size of the Earth, George. It has a surface gravity one-tenth of the Earth, and it's got an atmosphere almost two times thicker.
How does that happen?
How does it happen? And get this, the atmosphere is not what you'd expect. It's nitrogen. Nitrogen is not a primary gas. In other words, when solar systems form, the way they do the chemistry, nitrogen is the end product of the dissociation of much more complex molecules, like ammonia, which is NH3.
Mm-hmm.
So where did all this nitrogen come from? Why is it forming the fluffiest atmosphere of any body except for the gas giant planets in the solar system? Why is it cold enough to rain these incredible organic compounds? Why do we see evidence of erosion and canyons and vigorous surface activity, you know, that hydrological cycle? But when you look at Titan now, there is nary a cloud in the sky.
Yet
he thought it was raining there now.
Yeah, he said it's still happening.
It can't be, because that's one of the key mysteries from the Cassini mission. The only clouds that have shown up There's a little patch of clouds at exactly the point of the South Pole, all right, thousands of miles from where this thing landed. We know there are no clouds on Titan. There's a haze. There's all kinds of hazes.
Can the haze do this?
No. That's what's so, in order for a haze to do it, it has to become a cloud. By definition, a cloud is a haze that has an optical depth exceeding one, so you basically can't see through it. So where is this activity coming from, or where did it come from? In other words, what I'm getting at is this. There's this paper today out of the Brits, okay, which I think, by the way, is not an accident. The timing of somebody saying that interstellar visitors could visit us.
Yes, it's a dramatic story.
And this landing today, remember your first rule, George, there are no coincidences.
That's right.
Politically, I think these two stories are linked. Not directly, but at some level, somebody said, okay, let's put this out now. Here's why. I'm going to take a very bold step tonight as a prelude for something you and I are working on for maybe next week,
okay,
which is the big, big story, bigger than Titan, that you know that I'm working on that I don't want to talk about yet.
I know.
Having to do with Cassini and Saturn and an astonishing discovery that has been essentially ignored by everybody. And maybe it's because I'm in a unique position.
Maybe because you're the new NASA administrator, were able to do this.
And next week I'll talk about, if I was the new NASA administrator, what I would be doing about this and how I'm going to invite every person in the Coast audience to help me do something, even if I'm not the NASA administrator. You know, this is going to be one of those, your mission should you choose to accept it, folks.
Well, they must be thinking about you because they haven't named anyone yet.
Isn't that weird?
It is.
It's like they're watching this campaign go on and on and on that you have been promoting. And, you know, there's a lot of people that actually think it wouldn't be a bad idea.
It wouldn't be a bad idea. I think, and I don't want to digress from Titan for a moment, but I think a NASA administrator, his main function is promotion and developing and marketing and excitement of space. And I don't think anyone could do a better job than you to do that.
Well, thank you, George. You know, you need to have a kind of synoptic vision of where you come from and where you want to go. And that means you have to be able to relate all these sciences and engineering developments, state of the arts that exist, to what we should be doing so that we garner the benefits for all mankind that space exploration is supposed to do. Well, anyway, back to Titan. I'm beginning to think, and I will put data on the table next week when we publish our new piece on Enterprise, and you and I talk about it. I am beginning to think that Titan was terraformed.
Oh, come on. That's a big story.
Yes. Look at the chemistry.
Millions of years ago?
Well, and something then bizarre happened only millions of years ago, which is like yesterday in the solar system. And what we're looking at now is the wreck of Titan.
Well, and first of all, do you agree with David that Titan is as old as the planet Earth?
As a place.
As a place.
But I don't think its environment is as old. Because, and here's another thing that came out this week. There was a paper published by somebody whose name I forget. When they did the last Titan flyby with Cassini, you know, they dipped through the upper atmosphere.
Yeah.
720 miles up. Titan has such little gravity that what atmosphere it has goes up and up and up like 5-6 times higher than the Earth's atmosphere, which is all scrunched down because we have higher gravity, so it's compressed. On Titan, because you got 1/10 surface gravity of the Earth, that atmosphere, which is 2 bars practically, extends up hundreds and hundreds of miles. It's light and fluffy. It's called a scale height. The scale height on Titan is much higher than the scale height for a similar atmosphere on the Earth. So we were able to fly through that atmosphere with Cassini a few weeks ago, and they actually got samples. They actually were able to nab some molecules and actually analyze what it's really made of. And we now know the isotope combinations of the nitrogen of the atmosphere. And you know there's two basic isotopes of nitrogen, nitrogen-14 and nitrogen-15. Well, the ratio of those two tells you how much of the planet's primordial atmosphere has leaked away. And what the ratio is telling the scientists on this last flyby, and it will probably be confirmed by the ESA press conference in a few hours, the ratio on Titan is the weirdest of any body in the solar system. It looks like Titan has lost most of its atmosphere, of nitrogen, and there's still more of it left than anywhere else.
Yeah.
So it's weird, 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 weird.
Did you expect any of this?
No, no. In fact, I've been kind of synthesizing this idea, you know, between this morning at dawn, watching the landing, looking at some other data, kind of prepping for doing this conversation, and working on the mystery Cassini-Saturn story for next week. And it all kind of fell into place tonight. And when I was listening to you talk to David Grinspoon, a kind of couple little data points kind of went ding. And I said to myself, oh, my God, somebody may be gently trying to tell us that somebody visited not just Earth, that there's a technology of physics, which, of course, is hyperdimensional physics.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not, you know, play games here. The mainstream is admitting it in this trial balloon out of England tonight, simultaneous with landing on the most exotic, weird, strange place, not just in the Saturn system, but in the solar system. And is someone trying to, between the lines again, give us hint, hint, hint about what they're going to reveal next? Because I'm telling you, George, it looks like to me, from all the data I've gathered now over the last 20, 30 years of doing this, you know, looking at the Mars stuff, the artifacts on the moon, the strange things on the moons of Jupiter, et cetera, that somebody came and tinkered with this entire solar system.
Including Mars?
Including Mars, including Earth.
And you know what? According to these Brits, that is very possible.
Timing.
Yep.
It's all about timing.
Because we're also talking about, even though you say, what if it happened relatively soon in terms of space time, you're talking about what? Millions of years ago?
Yeah, you're talking the last 100 million years.
Yeah, so you take civilizations that might have 1 or 2 or 3 million years advanced physics than us.
It's not even that long. Look, the rate of increase in our knowledge is exponential. I have to laugh when people say, oh, you know, a civilization 1,000 years ahead of us or 10,000. A much more accurate model would be Michio Kaku's borrowing from the Soviet astrophysicist Kardashev, who was the guy who originally coined the Type 1, Type 2, Type 3 civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a number which tells you how much energy that civilization controls. Type 0 is basically us, stupid fossil fuels. Type 1 is planetary-level energy. Type 2 is stellar level, you know, the output of the entire sun.
Right.
Type 3 is the galaxy, like the Milky Way. And, you know, so if you do it that way, time is irrelevant because a breakthrough, you know, if we were to get rid of the politics tomorrow, you know, apropos of the show that you and I and Tim and Ira did a few weeks ago,
we could move up to a 1.
We'd move up to a 1 in the blink of an eye.
Exactly.
The technology's already there, so it isn't a matter of time. It's a matter of political maturation, which is a very different thing.
The little tiny country of Iceland is going to move up to a 1.
Go totally non-fossil fuel, and they say, what, 2050?
Yeah, 2050.
No, they'll make it in 10 years if they really want to.
That's true.
The technologies are there. It's politics, not technology and science, that are stopping us from doing amazing things.
When we come back from the break, we've got a few minutes here, I want to get your take on these pictures, and I want you to explain for us what you think we're looking at.
Okay.
They are simply mind-boggling.
Oh, and you ain't seen nothing.
And yet. I'm beginning to think Saturn's the moon of Titan. That's what I think.
Actually, Saturn is so unique, it's interesting and appropriate that Titan and the other things we're going to talk about are orbiting Saturn.
Now, and what about Europa, Jupiter's Europa? I mean, that could be as mysterious as Titan.
Well, it is, but it's a whole different environment where you have ice cover, and then inside the oceans you have God knows what's going on, I think, at a very sophisticated biological level, and that's a whole other program.
Did anybody expect to see what we saw today on Titan?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are models of the slushes of methane, the ethane, and all that. But what I don't think they expected to see was the vigorous surface evidence of activity now.
Right, right.
And that's what's so interesting. And I was fascinated that our friend David was very forthright in saying there could be life down there right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, we'll pick up, you know, after the break, because there's a report out of the University of Florida this week by a major researcher published in a major peer-reviewed journal saying exactly the same thing.
By the way, you are, and I want to congratulate you on this, your brand new DVD that is out, that is on your website. You're going to donate a portion of the proceeds
to... We are donating 10%, which is a tithe. Turns out to be $12, which is $1 for every country affected until further notice, you know, because there's a huge overwhelming need. And the more people that get the DVD and look at the discussion of the physics and the theology and the metaphysics and the kind of how it all fits together that we did at this conference, I think it's very appropriate that we have a hyperdimensional mechanism to help these people who, if you'll go to the Enterprise website and read what David Wilcock has written, were basically struck down by a hyperdimensional physics that we need to rapidly get a handle on.
We'll be back with Richard C. Hoagland. We'll get his take on these incredible pictures posted on theenterprisemission.com, also on coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505.
A star is born, they receive a gift or two. One of them is this: they have the power to make a dream come true. Upon a star, makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. If your heart is in your dream, no request is too extreme. When you wish upon a star, as dreamers do.
From the City of Angels, Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And our guest tonight, Richard C. Hoagland. After Dark CD, a double CD where you get great bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, and some classic ghost stories. A couple ways you can get this classic in a couple people, and I mentioned this yesterday. How many of these will we do? None. I will do no more. This is it for me in my CD career for packaging something like this. I did this as really... a producer had approached us, had a great idea to do this. A lot of people had asked for some bumper music and stories. I'm doing this one time. That's it. It's a collector's item. Call 1-800-598-2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. Or you can also order it online. Now, the phone number, by the way, is just for the CD. It's not for the newsletter. It's not for anything else. Operators can't help you with anything other than the CD. So that's 1-800-598-2331. And then the website, which is very easy to order, afterdarkcd.com. That's www.afterdarkcd.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, along with Richard C. Hoagland, who's working on another major story that should be ready midweek, Richard?
Yeah, about midweek.
Okay, very good. These pictures now, first of all, why black and white? Why not color?
They'll make color. I think they'll make color. It has to do with timing, you know, because remember, you're not looking at a video camera or a movie camera. You're looking at stills. In order to get color, you have to shoot a red and a green and a blue. And as you're descending on a parachute, it takes time, and there'll be smears. So I don't know whether they have the capability of color or did not. In any case, it won't really be a riot of color because we know the surface is basically shades of orange. I mean, go back and look at that artist's conception at the top of the page. What's much more important is the morphology, the shapes of things, the reflectivity, and the composition. I mean, we're going to get tons of data in a couple hours about what this landscape and this place is all about when that press conference takes place in Germany just as you go off the air.
In the wee hours.
You want to bring back that fifth hour, you know that?
I do that once in a while, you know.
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I do that. It's happened.
I mean, Coast is unique, and you're up for it. You're sitting in a nice studio, pampered by Tom.
Yeah, right. Okay, picture number one that I have on my website, which I assume echoes yours. I can't get into yours, as usual.
Oh, okay.
We are blasting
away.
Oh,
too bad. All right.
Let's use yours, and if you can, let's go through the three photos. And
yeah, I'm logged in.
Okay.
Can you look at number one, which is the vertical horizon shot?
Yes.
On the surface?
Yes.
Okay.
I've got that.
Did Lex make it fairly big?
Yeah, they're pretty good size.
Okay.
Sean did this tonight.
Sean, okay.
Okay.
All right. Notice the horizon.
Uh-huh.
All right. Look carefully at the horizon, all right?
All right.
The rocky stuff gets smaller and smaller, going away in the distance.
Right.
Then you got that kind of dark horizon.
Yep.
And then above it, there's a gray horizon.
Yes.
Now, remember, you're looking almost west. This spacecraft landed in the afternoon on Titan local time. So the sun was coming from the west, okay?
All right, I'm with you.
So we're looking. See where the shadows are on these icy boulders?
Yeah.
Kind of toward you?
They're coming from looks like the west to the east,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So okay. You're looking toward the west. Now, what happens when you stand, you know, and you've been out there in the west coast now for a year or two, when you stand on the Pacific Palisades and look out over the Pacific Ocean at sunset or towards sunset, what does the ocean look like?
Nice and calm. In flat.
And what color?
This same color.
Is it bright or dark?
It's dark.
No, it's bright.
Well, it goes in layers.
Because of the reflection
It starts bright and then it gets darker toward the back.
That's right. That's what I think we're seeing.
You think this is an ocean world?
I think we're looking at one of those seas, specular surface reflection. And that will be one of the surprises I'll look for in this upcoming press conference.
Too bad we didn't have a rover on this thing.
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it was such a tragedy to hear them say, oh, well, this is the last time we're going to visit Titan in our lifetime.
Well, but these aren't rocks, then. You're seeing these are ice chunks, as David also was saying.
Well, that's what we would think, given the density of the planet, that you're looking at rounded ice. Remember, at these temperatures, ice has a structural strength of steel. All right?
Yeah, that's true.
It ain't the familiar ice that we're used to. Nothing that comes out of the soda machine.
Yeah.
But they're rounded.
Why are they dirty looking?
Well, because there's stuff on them. There's gunk on them. There's this hydrocarbon stuff. You know, this is a place awash in organic molecules. But it was interesting today, I noticed that Torrence Johnson, an old friend of mine who's on the Cassini imaging team, you know, from orbit, where is Torrence? I think he's at the University of Arizona. He's a geologist. And he was with us when we did, you know, covered and did all the Voyager stuff years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really savvy guy. He said, you know, looking at this, he had seen three pictures, right? He says, I'm beginning to think there's less hydrocarbons than we thought. Now, that's important because that means he's coming to my way of thinking, which is we're not looking at a primordial billions and billions of years old surface. We're looking at something much younger. Some disjuncture in the history of the moon, a before and an after. And we're looking at the effects of the after.
And explain this, too. Some of these ice boulders, as I'll call them,
yes,
look like they kind of melted in to the ice surface because they're almost flat, but you could tell that they were small ice boulders at one time.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Now, in order to get ice to melt, the temperature has to be above freezing, right?
That's right.
It's currently 300 below zero. All right.
How does this happen?
Ice melts at 32.
I mean, it's
Fahrenheit.
These things are clearly embedded.
Ah, because I'm going to propose, as part of my big mystery thing for next week, that a major event happened to Titan, and it warmed up briefly, which is where all the nitrogen came from.
All right.
And we're looking at a surface that was remelted and then froze, and that was part of a major event that took place throughout the solar system, affecting this moon that I'm beginning to... Titan does not belong in the Saturn system. You got a gas giant planet with these rings, right? The rings we now know are made of ice. There are trillions and trillions and trillions of icebergs whirling around in a thin plane that, comparatively speaking, is razor thin. If the rings of Saturn were as big as,
Is that water ice, by the way, or is it methane ice around Saturn?
No, it's water ice.
Water ice, okay.
Water ice. All the other moons are water, 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 in form of solid, super solid, high-strength ice. Except this one. Where did all this other organic gunk come from? And the nitrogen, it's like it was a place prepared to have a biosphere, and then something bad happened. Well, where have you heard me say that before?
Mars.
Mars. And what was the bad thing that happened to Mars?
A collision.
Well, no, the planet it orbited in the Van Flandern model blew up. Now, Tom has had for years and years an idea that when that event happened, which was 65 million years ago, an eye blink in the space
in
of cosmic time,
yep.
That the pieces, the shrapnel, the debris from that explosion not only cascaded through the inner solar system, but it also sprayed the outer solar system. What if a major chunk of that planet that blew up hit Titan?
What if it was Titan?
Well, it wouldn't have stayed in orbit. It would have just kept on going.
Okay.
All right? Getting things to be captured is a very tricky thing if there's only two bodies. So let's assume that Titan was there because it had a reason for being there, and it got hit by something. It would create catastrophe on a local scale. It would basically radically change the environment. It would liberate a lot of stuff, and it would hang around for, 65 million years in terms of the geology of this time frame for events to happen is nothing. So it could explain why you got this incredible anomaly of a moon that has less gravity than our moon, that has an atmosphere almost denser than any other place, including the Earth.
Yeah, this is exciting.
It's so cool, because we've got this thing on station called Cassini, which is going to keep, like the Energizer Bunny, it's going to keep going and going and going. And I'm going to ask this audience next week to help me get some key observations that maybe the mainstream guys haven't thought of, but we're paying for it, so we should have a right to ask for certain answers and not have to wait for 2 years to get them.
All right. Next picture. Tell me which one you want to look at.
Okay, well, now, of course, we're back on the parachutes descending. The one on the right is about 16 kilometers, which is 10 miles. That's a picture taken from 50,000 feet looking down at Titan. And what it looks like is you got a bunch of eroded hills, and it looks like you got the beach and the ocean on the right.
Yeah, and what kind of an angle is this, by the way? Should it be turned over?
I don't know where north is on these pictures, because NASA is not very... they're not as organized as JPL and NASA at putting out data. It was rather incoherent trying to piece together imagery and data.
All right. Clearly, there's an ocean of something on the right.
It looks like it's more that black stuff, which we think is methane and ethane and stuff like that,
these
hydrocarbons. The picture on the left is closer than the one on the right. It's about half as far away. So you're at about 25,000 feet. And the smallest thing you're seeing is maybe 20 meters, which is a meter is 3 feet, so it's 60 to 100 feet for the tiny things. But what you want to notice is the bright stuff and then the dark black stuff, which has very sharp edges, which looks, as I said before, if you scroll to the top of the page, it looks like one of those dark methane lakes that the artist at JPL put together a few weeks ago. if that's real liquid stuff, it's not behaving like liquid should here. When we've done radar from the Earth, they've sprayed radio energy from Arecibo at Titan, mm-hmm. gotten echoes back. They found what they call a specular glint, a specular reflection, which is how you know when you're dealing with a very smooth liquid. But what they didn't see when they did the radar from Cassini a few weeks ago, or the optical images, you know, the first pass, the close pass, they didn't see the same kind of sun glint or zero phase point reflection that they expected. So we've got some real paradoxes. We have things that look like lakes. We've got terrain that looks like it's eroded by some kind of liquid, but we don't see the current evidence in the close-ups, only when you're looking at the entire planet, which means maybe there's only a bunch of little ponds left because the place is drying up, meaning that there was an event and it's recovering from that event on a scale of millions and millions of years, because we're looking at a humongous whopping collision, if I'm, you know, right in the ballpark about what could have happened.
And you may be.
Well, we have the means of finding out. I mean, it's so tempting to really want to be the NASA administrator, because then I could just tell these guys, go do this.
Or they're fired.
Go on behalf of the American people, go and find out the answers to these questions that no one is thinking of publicly yet. And it's not going to cost anything, because we're already there. It's just a matter of priorities.
Now, beyond me talking about it and nominating you, mm-hmm. have you, like, officially applied for this yet?
No, and you can't, because it's, you know, at the pleasure of the president. It would basically have to be a political decision by the White House that they would do something incredibly bizarre, which is to pick an outsider, although that has happened in government before.
That has happened before.
People brought in to basically clean house, and, you know, the president now wants us to go to the moon and on to Mars, and he talked... Today was the anniversary, by the way. Do you know today was the anniversary of his announcement a year ago that we were going to go and do all these things?
Is it gone by that fast?
One whole year, George. Where did the year go?
Oh, my God.
Anyway, NASA had a big ceremony, and O'Keefe was down at the Cape, you know, with a leadership meeting, talking about, you know, with clips from the president's speech. And what was interesting is the president used some very precise language. He talked about this as a step to put the human presence all across the solar system. I mean, that is one heck of a vision. But to do it, you're going to have to mobilize resources, public commitment, dollars, the Congress. There has to be some real political lobbying and a sense of mission put before the American people, and there has been none of that. This has all been a kind of an insider's game in Washington, and the American people have not really been asked, what would you like to see, and how would you like to have a space agency which would tell you the truth for a change about a lot of what we're getting out there?
Do you think if you were the administrator, you'd be able to get the truth and get it out to us?
Well, I certainly would try.
Oh,
and if
there's
I couldn't,
no,
I would quit, and I would let everybody know why I quit, which is the way it used to be done.
Yep.
And by that very act, there would be signals sent to all levels that it was not business as usual.
Well, you know what, Richard? We got to get you in there, or at least considered. Maybe you are being considered.
Well, what I'm
like I say,
about,
it is strange.
It was supposed to be announced within a few days.
This was a month ago. A month ago, yeah. Sean O'Keefe said he was going to quit.
Yep.
And there's still been nobody named, no leaks of anybody. That's the other bizarre thing.
No.
Normally you get three or four names.
Well, there was a list published immediately of people, and then it just all kind of died.
Yeah, but it was very unofficial.
It was very unofficial, yeah. There was no... Look, it would be an extraordinary development if it happened. It would make me incredibly, you know, have to take it very seriously, because I could do a lot of good. And with the help of the American people, I could do what we need to have done, which is to get at the truth. And I'm telling you, next week when we talk about the mystery story, I will show you how this agency is not dealing honestly with the other mystery. They're dealing pretty cleverly and honestly with Titan because it won't bite us. It's like it isn't going to upset the apple cart. It's part of the time-release aspirin. But this other mystery is so staggering. In fact, I think it's a more interesting and more important place for Cassini to focus his attentions than Titan.
Well, and we know what you're talking about, at least I do,
yes,
and it is very bizarre.
So So what we need to do is have people go to Enterprise repeatedly and look for when we're going to post the story with the documentation and the links and the usual way we do it. And then you and I will have an exquisite conversation, and we'll have a lot of fun. We will have new data from Titan then, the Huygens data. We'll have real data to talk about in terms of conditions and temperatures and what these liquids are and if there is the possibility of little beasties or big beasties. And then we'll talk about the future of where do we go from here, and I will ask this audience to help me make a significant new direction for the Cassini mission.
Are you going to monitor this this news conference in Darmstadt, Germany?
Are you kidding? Of course.
And you, are you sure of the time?
Absolutely. Unequivocally. It's at 3 a.m. my time, which is 2 a.m. your time.
They're going to come out with an announcement.
Yep. Well, it's a whole press conference with all the PIs with their first flash of data, like, you know, NASA does on Opportunity and Spirit. And
they're not going to put it on the NASA website maybe an hour before that?
No, no. It's embargoed until they actually say, it's ego. Come on, George. You're not going to have guys that have spent 20 years getting this data leak it out over the web until they actually can sit there and smile at the camera in French and German and Italian and tell the world.
David believes that Huygens is now dead. Do you believe that too?
Yes. Well, it only had battery life to last optimistically maybe 8 or 9 hours, and it has died, but it gave us a lot of additional data in terms of the ground radio telescope perception that was not, you know, really forecast.
Is this one of the most dramatic space finds we've had in a long time?
If it means what I think it means, and remember, I'm thinking out of the box.
Yes.
The Titan is the alien in the Saturn solar system. It could be the beginning of a whole new set of discussions, and that will feed in exquisitely to what we're going to do next week.
Does that change the perception of mankind?
It should, because it means maybe we have been tinkered with en masse. This solar system, I'm beginning to think, George, might have been a nursery.
Yeah, you may be right. Or a garden.
Same metaphor.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Richard, let's keep in touch.
Okay, go to the Enterprise web, guys. Please buy the DVD so we can help some of these poor people in Asia, because it's only the beginning of a set of tragedies if we don't intervene.
Richard C. Hoagland, when I come right back, a couple hours of our Friday into Saturday morning open lines for you, and we're going to start when I come back. Friend of mine who does a national radio talk show has had a very compelling ghost situation. I'm going to play a portion of that for you. I asked him to record something so you can hear what happened. And then the last hour before we sign off, Dr. Morgus has a few things to say to you.
Miss part of the show? Listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.